this is the source.
I live in Coal Valley.
Oh, I see.
Pacific Heights.
Mm, extremely.
San Carlos.
Well, there you are.
Daly City.
Sunnyvale.
It was done, finished. But
El Cerrito.
Something was lacking.
Lower Haight, man.
And then it came.
People are often surprised to learn that there's a redwood grove less than a mile from Oakland city limits where people have lived in quirky homes for nearly a century. We're talking about Canyon, a place that draws a particular kind of resident.
People who found life in Berkeley too confining.
That's author John Vanderzee, who's written about Canyon. He spoke with KALW's Stephen Short about this elusive community.
Anyone familiar with the East Bay town of Moraga is likely to be familiar with Canyon Road. It's a major thoroughfare in the area. But they might not realize that Canyon Road leads to the small settlement named Canyon.
Canyon is the example of meeting nature halfway and doing it with ingenious and inventive ways of living that don't involve things like mortgages or huge houses or conventional zoning.
That's John Vanderzee, author of Canyon, the story of the last rustic community in metropolitan America. Before Canyon became known as an unconventional and secluded hideaway, it was a source of seemingly limitless lumber. This was back in the days of the tall timber. How tall?
Canyon is the farthest inland where the coastal redwoods, the Sequoia sempervirens, that's the farthest inland they ever grew. And apparently there were redwoods there tall enough you could spot them from the entrance to San Francisco Bay, from the Golden Gate, and ships could use that as a navigation point.
The location of these natural redwood beacons was inscribed on British sailing charts as far back as the 1820s. Not surprisingly, this uninhabited area was known at that time as Redwood Canyon, becoming simply Canyon once the trees were gone. But this isn't the well-worn tale of gold-crazed 49ers rampaging through the area.
These redwoods were all logged out, dating back to the Mexican era. They supposedly, some of the lumber from those redwoods was used in the outbuildings at Mission San Jose.
Eventually, the harvested redwoods grew back.
And people realized this place was a sort of refuge, especially in summer when it can be quite warm in East Bay and beyond.
Remember, this was before air conditioning or even electricity, so summer communities started sprouting among the trees. Eventually, nature lovers and free thinkers moved in full time. That was the case in the 1860s. And it was again in the 1960s.
It drew people who found life in Berkeley too confining. And if you wanted to be at home and wear no clothes, or if you wanted to experiment with certain substances, or if you wanted to try alternate means of political activity, architecture, that was the place to go. And it coincided with the period of the Whole Earth Catalog and Back to the Land movement. So very much the political stuff of that era was generated from Canyon.
But let's not give the impression that Canyon was or is solely an enclave of off-the-grid summer people.
At the time I became involved in Canyon, the president of the community club, who is in effect the mayor, was a physicist at Berkeley. One of the people who lived there was a cop. There were lawyers, architects.
But not everyone approved of this seemingly carefree lifestyle. Vanderzee notes that the land surrounding this community is owned by the East Bay Municipal Utility District. That agency was concerned that off-the-grid human habitation would erode the water quality. So they bought out about half of the homes in the 1960s and bulldozed them. This only added to the resolve of those remaining.
Canyon resisted and used their imaginations and determined that they would stick. Where all the attention came from was during the 60s, and they were struggling to survive, and the Grateful Dead played a concert there, Country Joe and the Fish played. It was all in support of the community.
This was around the time that Harvard professor Timothy Leary was advising young people over in San Francisco to drop out of the capitalist society.
Turn on, tune in,
Canyon appeared to have everything a citizen of the counterculture could want. Groovy redwood trees and free, far-out music concerts and an accepting communal lifestyle. Eventually, Vanderzee says, runaways started arriving from all over the country, a turn of events that was not well received by neighbors in the surrounding suburbs.
And these kids would turn up, and the Canyon people's defense was, hey, it's not us they're running away from. They're running away from the suburbs and coming here.
The runaways, let's call them latter-day summer people, soon moved on. They were replaced by other newcomers serious about helping this hands-on community thrive. And hands-on, as Vanderzee points out, is not an idle expression in Canyon.
They were going to rebuild the Canyon School, and the committee consisted of anybody who was willing to show up. It was very unwieldy. It took a long time, but they got a great school out of it, a great schoolhouse. And that's why Canyon works when other communities do not. It's this powerful sense of community, tradition of it, that's still vital and alive.
That two-room schoolhouse is one of only two public buildings in this do-it-yourself community of about 80 homes, the post office being the other. And that important gathering spot is weakening. The town will lose its only full-time postal employee later this year. But Canyon has survived bigger losses by doing what any tight-knit community should, working together. Nestled in the tall trees of Canyon, I'm Stephen Short for Cross Currents.